The next morning, Bill Peterson called to the stand Cindy McIntosh, who admitted being in jail on bad check charges when she met both Dennis Fritz and Ron Williamson. She testified that she overheard the two talking, with Ron asking Dennis about the crime scene photos of Debbie Carter. "Was she on the bed or on the floor?" Ron asked Dennis. "On the floor," Dennis said. McIntosh admitted that she was not convicted on the check charges. "I paid off the checks and they let me out," she said. With the snitches out of the way, Peterson returned to more credible proof. Slightly more credible. He called to the stand four consecutive witnesses who worked for the state crime lab. Their impact on the jury was profound, as it always is. They were educated, trained, certified, experienced, and they worked for the state of Oklahoma. They were experts, and they were there to testify against the defendant to help prove his guilt. The first was the fingerprint expert, Jerry Peters. He explained to the jury that he examined 21 prints lifted from Debbie's apartment and car, 19 of which were Debbie's. One matched Detective Dennis Smith, one matched Mike Carpenter, and not a single fingerprint belonged to either Dennis Fritz or Ron Williamson. Odd that the fingerprint expert would testify that none of the fingerprints were left behind by the accused. Larry Mullins described how he reprinted Debbie's palms the previous May when her body was exhumed. He gave the new prints to Jerry Peters, who suddenly saw things he hadn't seen 4.5 years earlier. The prosecution's theory, the same one to be used against Ron Williamson, was that during the prolonged and violent assault Debbie was wounded, her blood somehow ended up on her left palm, and this palm touched a tiny portion of sheetrock just above the floor of her bedroom. Since the palm print did not belong to Ron or Dennis, and it certainly could not belong to the real killer, it had to be Debbie's. Mary Long was a criminalist who worked primarily with body fluids. She explained to the jury that about 20% of all people do not show their blood type in body fluids, such as saliva, semen, and sweat. This segment is known in the trade as non-secretors. Based on her examination of the blood and saliva samples from Ron and Dennis, she was certain that they were non-secretors. The person who left the semen at the crime scene was probably a non-secretor too, though Long was not certain because the evidence was insufficient. Thus, 80% of the population was eliminated from suspicion, or around 80%, give or take a few points. Nonetheless, Fritz and Williamson now bore the ominous tag of non-secretors. Long's math was blown away on cross-examination when Greg Saunders forced her to admit that most of the blood and saliva samples she analyzed in the Carter case came from non-secretors. Of the 20 samples she examined, 12 were from non-secretors, including Fritz and Williamson. 60% of those in her pool of suspects were non-secretors, as opposed to the national average of only 20%. It didn't matter. Her testimony excluded many and helped raise the suspicion hanging over the head of Dennis Fritz. The state's last witness was by far its most effective. Peterson saved his knockout punch for the last round, and when Melvin Hett finished testifying, the jury was convinced. Hett was the OSBI hairman, a veteran testifier who'd helped send many people to prison.